really devoted to this idea that they want to change their society from this systemically corrupt one to one in which the rule of law prevails, no matter whether you're a black poor kid from the favela or an extraordinarily rich oligarch born into billions of dollars in wealth.
It seems more and more lately that he has just become a very useful tool for the right, to the far right, to be able to take out and be like, well, we have here Glenn Greenwald, clearly not someone on the right. I mean, you actually were almost jailed by Jair Bolsonaro, if I'm correct. You are correct. And also, you wrote about Edward Snowden, Julian Assange, stuff like that, Lula da Silva. You clearly are not a right winger. No, I'm not a right winger. Okay, well, here's the thing. I need to have someone like you validate. Can you validate that? And he's like, yep, stamp. And then that's basically the segment. And then rinse and repeat. Throw in some money in there occasionally. Right-wing media personalities are increasingly embracing a two-century-old expression of U.S. imperialism called the Monroe Doctrine and exposing their own militaristic impulses in the process. Fox News top star Tucker Carlson and former Trump advisor Steve Bannon have both recently endorsed the Monroe Doctrine as a guiding principle, undercutting their supposedly isolationist views on U.S. military policy because of fucking course, I told you all, no, there is no such thing as the non-fucking imperialist Republicans. You liars, you fiends. Fucking the Jimmy Dores, the Glenn Greenwalds, every single one of you, all of you have been trying to push this narrative that, oh, well, you know, the Marjorie Taylor Greens, the Matt Gaetz, they seem to be the only ones who don't want to vote for these wartime measures. It seems like what we used to consider the left are now very hyper-focused and pro-war, and it seems like people who used to be called the extreme far right, now they're the only ones who want to be like, no, of course not. What is wrong with all of you? Yeah, I mean, in the case of Glenn Greenwald, I understand, you're lying for money, but in the case of, like, a lot of other people, that you are just confused, like Jackson Hinkle, I just guess confused. I mean, whenever you speed run going from like a fucking blue wave, I'm with her, to Bernie bro, all the way to hardcore misogynist racist fucking pundit, yeah, that speed run is going to end up with quite a few misinterpretations of what is going on in other parts of the world. The so-called America First ideology that Bannon, Carlson, and others in the Trump-aligned right-wing conservative movement identify, which is sometimes described incorrectly as isolationist. The recent invocations of the Monroe Doctrine suggest that far from being isolationist, these conservatives are increasingly interested in dominating China militarily, especially in the Western Hemisphere. And again, Antifa Protogen, thank you. Again, this is what I've been saying. If you have people coming on Tucker Carlson's show who are like, I want to sit on the throne of Chinese skulls, Tucker Carlson's doing zero pushback against that or being like, oh, well, that's an outrageous statement to say about another sovereign nation and the individuals who live therein, I'm probably going to have to explore that because, again, it's just a weird thing to say randomly in this. No, he's just like, yeah, the skulls. Yeah, we'll drink the blood. That's obviously not the signs of someone who's kind of like hyper-focused on, well, you know what, the old days of, say, neo-imperialism of the United States, in which they will use both resource extraction through military engagement is probably not the best path forward. We should probably stop that. I don't get that vibe. I don't get that read for many of them. I way more get a like, well, yes, we're not looking to go in a proxy war with Russia. That's the Democrats and the libs who do that. We want proxy wars with Iran and China. And then the Dems are like, we could probably do Iran. We're feeling you on Iran. We don't like them either. So that's where you'll get both sides being like, okay, the military-industrial complex, we can find a match here. We're both speaking each other's language. But that's it. It's not as if the Republicans are suddenly these anti-imperialist, anti-war machines, anti-military-industrial complex. Like, are you fucking kidding me? How would you ever be so obtuse as to even propose that? And that's like, for Greenwald and Jimmy Dore, this is a huge selling point that they try to push on a lot of people who think they're, quote, on the left. Carlson, the Monroe Doctrine, and our hemisphere. Last year, Carlson's team made a documentary-style film about Brazil that conspicuously avoided discussing whether then-President Jair Bolsonaro would respect the results of the upcoming election or if he'd attempt to stay in power using extrajudicial means. Carlson began the film by offering his definition of the Monroe Doctrine and explicitly claiming that the U.S. imperial domain over the rest of the Western Hemisphere. Oh my god.
Thank you. In 1823, President James Monroe announced a policy that has been the center of American foreign policy for the last 200 years. Called the Monroe Doctrine, it has a very simple thesis. Great powers would not be allowed to control nations in the Western Hemisphere. That would be a direct threat to the interests of the United States. And for 200 years, we haven't allowed it.
Whoa! Whoa! How did this one fall under the radar? Because that's a very, very clear, like, so we dominate the West, and we're going to continue to dominate the West. Yeah, the West, by the way.
Under the Biden administration, the Monroe Doctrine is no longer enforced. Constrained by its ideological concerns, political grievances,
who does
above
that?
All, distracted by a faraway war in Eastern Europe, the Biden administration
he's
has
falling.
Abdicated its
he
responsibility.
Fell again. Three
and
times.
Into the void left by
Whoa,
the United States
real soldiers.
A new superpower. We've come to Brazil
Those
to
aren't
see
soy
for
boys.
Ourselves the rise of China.
Oh my
and
God.
How the government of China is replacing the United States as the dominant power in our hemisphere.
Holy shit. In our hemisphere. I didn't know that. It's incredible. Well, good to know. Carlson's use of the first-person plural possessive phrase here, our hemisphere, is key. The R clearly refers to the United States, not a broader collective of self-governed countries in the hemisphere. In Carlson's rendering, the fight between the United States and China for dominance over Brazil, not for the Brazilian sovereignty in and of itself. So, this is imperialism, everybody. This is U.S. imperialism. This is, again, old-timey shit as well. You don't really hear a lot of people invoking the Monroe Doctrine as a guiding principle in today's day and age without any kind of caveats or but or asterisks or anything, right? Maybe because this plays on Tucker Carlson's, like, show, not the Fox News show, on his other one, his subscription service show, that maybe that's why this one kind of, like, fell by the wayside. Carlson has casually asserted the United States' rightful domain over Latin and South America before. In February, he reported that China had announced a partnership with Argentina in part on currency. Argentina's president has also said the nation would join China's Belt and Road project. He continued, again, it's in our hemisphere. Monroe Doctrine, anyone? But it's happening, and nobody's even mentioning it. So this is very, very clear language, you know? Very, very clear, basically, the United States is the world's imperial superpower and needs to continue to dominate and, engage in imperialism within Central and South America in order to, again, protect the interests of the United States and, in turn, theirs as well. You know, looking out for them too, don't worry. But anyways, there can't be these outside influences looking to invest in it. And obviously, countries, especially countries that are impoverished, are going to look towards who's going to provide them with financial assistance. If China is offering them better loans, better loan, repayment plans, and or even better loan forgiveness plans, which China versus the United States is very known to do. If you look at countries in Africa in terms of the amount of loan and debt forgiveness that China gives versus the IMF or the World Bank, obviously you would choose China if China's like, we're going to forgive vast amounts of that money. So if South and Central America are also doing that, that's not a direct attack or assault on the United States in the way that Tucker Carlson's wording it. You could say that they're doing this intentionally for economic warfare. You could say that they're doing this intentionally in order to advance their own forms of soft imperialism and or control. Those are different statements, but that's very different than saying that there's an inalienable right of the United States to control the Western Hemisphere, and as a result of that, all the countries underneath fall under their purview, and like their own sovereignty be damned. Like, should Argentina have a right to take money from China? Because personally, I would say yes. The same thing with Brazil, should they choose. They shouldn't have to choose or be forced to choose whether or not they accept large amounts of loans from any specific country. The CCP aims to create Latin America as a communist superstate backed by Chinese Communist Party directly aimed at the United States, Bannon said. This is what the Monroe Doctrine was about. Our founders, our framers warned us, don't go searching for monsters to slay in Ukraine. Watch what they do here in the Western Hemisphere, he continued. We're not in a great position, and now we have it in our hemisphere. China under Lula, we will have to control the entire wealth and power and geopolitical strategic position of South America. Like, Jesus Christ, I didn't know they were just straight up saying this kind of stuff out loud, but...
Latin America as a communist superstate backed by the Chinese Communist Party directly aimed at the United States. This is what the Monroe Doctrine is about. This is what our founders and framers warned us. But don't go searching for monsters to slay in Ukraine.
Oh, hey, you scroll past the part where it said Bannon's show open with an anti-Chinese rap song. Do we have access to that? Oh, sorry. His show's bumper music is a rap song by Chinese dissident and Bannon backer, Miles Guo, whose hook is, "Let's take down the CCP." Yes. Yes, this is happening.
There's pushback in places like the south side of Chicago. Now, Steve, no, there's no map. Once again,
lie to them and cover it up real quickly. How did they get you on social media? All your great content.
Please find
Wolf. Exactly what did the FDA do to suppress the information about the booster? Next in the war room.
他们的恐惧是我们的武器，我们的胜利。谢谢啦，兄弟姐妹们，你们健身了吗？行动，行动，行动！中国，你完了！Take down the CCP.
So it was the aesthetic you were going for. You're like, okay, so I want to, like, shoot me like Titanic. I want the wind blowing so you can actually see and everything. But almost every shot I need a cigar, all right, without exception. So if for whatever reason you see me and you're doing the whole, like, spin around 360 or some drone footage, make sure I got at least one cigar in my hand. This is Steve Bannon's official theme song. That's amazing. I'm really happy I discovered this. Everything's just beginning. Oh, I didn't know we were getting actual vocals. I thought this was just kind of like metal hip hop, but never mind. Alright, here we go. But the games you want to play. I'm liking the Creed aesthetic too, you know? To the end, just watch and see. It's all started, everything's begun, and you are over. You're over. Cause we're taking down the CCP. Spread the word all through Hong Kong. We will fight till they're all gone. We rejoice when there's no more. Let's take down the CCP. They have our life for too long. We will end what they do wrong. Spread the word all through Hong Kong. Let's take So to be clear, let the bullets fly a little longer and you will surrender. Oh, and we're doing it a second time. All right, that hook has not resonated enough. I like how that one's even quicker. Let the bullets fly a little longer. Nice, here we go. 这个 CCP 还能让我们远离恐惧。 Take it down, CCP. They try to scare the nation with fabrication. But we see through the lies. Got your soggy. People fight you back. Police corruption with crooked assumption. They ran our lives. But no more, we will win. We will take down the CCP. Whoa, I've never seen frames like this before. Joyce, when there's no more, let's take down the CCP. They have all lied for too long. We will end what they do wrong. Spread the word of the wrong come. Let's take down the CCP. Okay, I think we've caught the ethos of where this was going.
Watch what they do here in the Western Hemisphere, sir.
Well, I mean, you're 100% right. China's playing the long game, and they are smart, as well as their allies
smart.
That are starkly adversarial to us. Our leadership are the dummies. They're playing a global pincer movement, the same way the Spartans would have done in the Greek city-states, or Alexander the Great would have done out of Macedonia as he conquered half of Europe. We're not in a great position, and now we have it in our hemisphere. China, under Lula, will have a control of the entire wealth and power and geopolitical strategic positioning of South America. They're in motion on it, as we said in the first
Like, you're so far behind on this. Like, do you even know about BRIC? Like, there's a bunch of nations that have banded together to show that economically they don't need to depend entirely upon the United States anymore. Yeah, that's already happened.
They're talking about a...
In terms of a global pincer movement, like, it's not as if there is foreign investment that takes place in, say, Argentina or Brazil from, say, China, and that results in suddenly there being, like, a whole bunch of soldiers just pointing their guns at America on that point. Like, it's, you're thinking of this in terms of risk. I think your whole geopolitical analyst of the world is like it's basically a big game of risk at all times.
One wide currency for South America. It makes no sense economically, but it does make sense geopolitically if you're trying to consolidate power. It's right out of Orwell's framework. Orwell said in global communism, Orwell, when they win, it'll be three geographically aligned super states. Oceania was always at
war. Okay. Look, I love 1984 as much as the next person. You right-wingers are kind of ruining 1984 for me. But I will remind you, just so we're clear, 1984 was still a work of fiction. He didn't say that it was going to be a predictor, as in there's literally going to be these three passive states fighting each other. Jesus. And according to Animal Farm, animals can talk. So that's next. China's doing that.
War with East Asia. Well, South America, Mercosur, as they even call it in South America, will be a Marxist superstate should the Brazilians accept Lula as their leader, because there will never be free, fair, and credible elections again there if this continues to be cemented and validated.
See, again, like, this whole, fascist, we don't accept elections anymore bullshit. If there was an international condemnation over the election results of Brazil, if there was an international governing bodies who actually oversaw and approved of the elections of Brazil as being, yes, democratic, in fact, yes. This isn't one of those, I mean, like, I guess y'all already did this for America, where it's like, oh, Dominion voting systems, but what about Venezuela? And the pillow guy said something. The fact that they're invoking the Monroe Doctrine still in this day and age, though, I mean, like, that's kind of just old-timey world dominance and worldview. The fact that it's shared by both Tucker Carlson and Steve Bannon, that is pretty distressing, to say the least. Brazil Wire had this thread on Greenwald and his involvement. A reminder that Greenwald omitted both open and covert U.S. involvement in Lava Jato from his book about Lava Jato. His last known writing on the U.S. interference in Brazil was in mid-2015, despite having massive amounts of evidence. In 2017, with Lula facing jail and the U.S. Department of Justice role, openly admitted Greenwald presents far-right Lava Jato task force with the Allard Prize, lauding their courage. They privately called Lula's arrest, which kept him out of the 2018 election, a gift from the CIA.
Organized criminality. The entire political system is based on, predicated in, systemic corruption, and they've done it for decades with complete impunity. And so if you are young prosecutors in your 30s, as we saw in the videos, most of them are, and you want to take on the richest and most powerful people, there's no instruction manual for how you do that. There's no handbook. There's no guide for what it is that you can do. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to have to be resourceful. You're going to have to make difficult judgment calls. To watch Brazilians in a young democracy put the most powerful billionaires in prison, and politicians who wield great power from multiple parties across the spectrum, to put them in prison as well, notwithstanding the mistakes I think they've made and the very valid critiques that have occasionally been voiced against them, that is something that I consider extraordinarily brave and worthy of support and worthy of being honored. And so I think that what we can say about the Brazilian task force, Lava Jato, as we call it in Brazil, car wash, as we call it here, what I think we can say about them is that they definitely have not been perfect, but what they have been is very principled and very persistent.
Wow.
And they're really devoted to this idea that they want to change their society from this systemically corrupt one to one in which the rule of law prevails, no matter whether you're a black, poor kid from the favela or an extraordinarily rich oligarch born into billions of dollars in wealth. And so I think they embody that first attribute of...
Holy shit. Damn. All right. Well, he say it. Also, It's kind of wild. He was just on Brianna Joy Gray's show, Bad Faith, the one that Virgil Texas used to be on before Virgil Texas disappeared because of the whole grooming allegations thing. He was on there recently to talk about how it's weird that people on the left get really mad and say I used to be left, but I've never told anyone that I was left. I've always identified as a first and foremost a journalist and a truthsayer. I mean, to be completely honest with you, the man is basically just for sale and has been for a very long time. His hyper-focus has always been in the range of government overreach. Reach surveillance programs, that kind of stuff, in order to have complete and unadulterated and total free speech at all times. Unless, of course, it concerns him. I mean, he doesn't like when people obviously mock or impersonate or, pretend to be him online. So, he's pretty quick to call that out. But otherwise, total and complete and unadulterated free speech. But it seems more and more lately that he has just become a very useful tool for the right, to the far right, to be able to take out and be like, well, we have here Glenn Greenwald, clearly not someone on the right. I mean, you actually were almost jailed by Jair Bolsonaro, if I'm correct. You are correct. And also, you wrote about Edward Snowden, Julian Assange, stuff like that, Lula da Silva. You clearly are not a right winger. No, I'm not a right winger. Okay, well, here's the thing I need to have someone like you validate. Can you validate that? And he's like, yep, stamp. And then that's basically the segment. And then rinse and repeat. Throwing some money in there occasionally. Greenwald waited until Lavajato had already brought Bolsonaro to power before he challenged it. Hacker Walter Delgatti complained that Greenwald refused majority of the Vasajato leak and that he was disappointed by the limited scope of Glenn's reporting. In early 2018, Brazil Wire reported on the U.S. involvement in Lavajato and was used in an attempt to acquit Lula. Greenwald was personally offered an exclusive, which would have weakened the case against Lula long before Bolsonaro's election, but he ignored it. Why? Why would you do that? For example, Lula responded on Twitter to the reporting by Greenwald's colleagues with the allegation. The goal was Petrobras, Brazil's state-owned oil giant, and it was the pre-salt Brazilian offshore oil and the Brazilian companies that were winning bids from U.S. companies in the Middle East. Lula's claim, he has elaborated elsewhere, is the idea that Lava Jato was born in the Department of Justice in the United States with the aim of destroying Brazilian competitors to U.S. companies in petroleum, naval construction, and civil engineering, all sectors targeted by Lava Jato. Perhaps Greenwald disagrees with Lula here, then surely Lula's claim deserves a refutation, especially because its principal evidence basis is Greenwald's own archive. Securing Democracy does note that Greenwald's work on the Snowden archive proved that the NSA and the government communication headquarters in the UK were spying on Petrobras, the state-owned oil company whose proceed funds Brazil social programs. But the question of foreign intervention in Brazil appears principally in the past tense in Securing Democracy and never in relation to Greenwald's own Vasajato archive. I should note that I have not seen enough evidence to weigh in with the confidence of Lula's assertion about the economic intentions of the Lavajato team. Despite Greenwald's silence on the U.S. participation and what he convincingly shows to be a regime change operation in the 21st century Brazil, Securing Democracy runs along a long history of U.S. regime change operations in Latin America, discussing U.S. support for the 1964 coup against central-left Brazilian government that was replaced 21-year military dictatorship. Greenwald notes the U.S. refusal to tolerate any form of leftism in Latin America's largest country, even if it meant the imposition of despotism, where democracy has been taking root, was virtually inevitable. Greenwald also mentions Brazil's enduring colonial relationship with the United States and notes that he learned from the Edward Snowden in Brazil, the largest CIA presidents in the hemisphere. So why doesn't Securing Democracy examine the U.S. involvement in the process that removed the elected left from the power in the country in 2016 and brought an admirer of the right-wing despotism to power in 2018? What changed between 1964 and 2016 that made the U.S. involvement in the left-to-right regime change operation in Brazil noteworthy or even inevitable? As Greenwald acknowledges in his book, To the United States, the PT government's forging of a foreign policy in a way that diverged from the U.S. dictates was intolerable. Fortunately for the U.S. officials who found PT's independent foreign policy intolerable, Lavajato resolved this problem for them. Upon inauguration, Bolsonaro assumed a posture of alignment with Trump's government in a matter of foreign policy. And that's where the dots connected. Journalists Corinne Greenwald and Matt Taibbi are known for exposing the crimes of the police, the military, and Wall Street, but they also spout dangerous conservative hyperbole about the left. What's going on? I think the answer is probably money. It's money. It's going to be money.
Do you enjoy the surfs but prefer not to have to use your eyeballs? Many are saying this. Well, we've got the solution for you. It's the Surf Times in podcast form, available on most major podcasting networks now. If you enjoy it, please consider leaving a good review and feedback because it really helps the show out, apparently, and it's free, just like the podcast.
To our gods, Xander Corvus and Peyton L. Juice, we shall spend many a generations building mighty cathedrals in your honor. To our monarch, Tom Spiker, we are but your oafish jesters, here to offer you a laugh at any opportunity. to our brave Knights of the Roundtable, Rachel K., Izzy Solidarity, Victoria Bell, Sebastian Demel, Mark Harmon, Benji Arnie, Scary Earth Human, Tony, DM Rivera, Resident Scarecrow, Sir Nickus, Cheryl Alvarez, Ruby Kelly, Brandon, Words Greenwood, Everything Important, Hegbert Celine, Matthew Scarborough, Stellar Vision, Ariane McCarthy, Doug Cady, Daniel Sutton, Jenna Tao, Dark Puppy, Quiet One 85, Anna Loves Riley, Omni, Riley and Anna, Poodle Hawk, Multi Mondi, Trevbot EXE, Brian Ephraim, Anthropofojak, Catherine, Ramon Acosta, Nkosin, Ralph Parler, Violent Orchard, Political Puppy, La Media Panza, Todd Buckingham, and Todd Lajeunesse. We salute our valiant heroes off to fight injustice everywhere.